Hi, and welcome back to A Twist of Fate. This week's episode, we are talking about Richard Ramirez. Richard Ramirez grew up in El Paso, Texas, and had a terrifyingly violent family. He was born on February 29, 1960, being the youngest of Mercedes and Julian's five kids. Julian Ramirez was originally from Mexico and had been a police officer in Ciudad, however, was working as a laborer on the Atkinson, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railway. He was also an abusive alcoholic. At 12 years old, one of Richard's biggest influences had been his cousin Miguel, a decorated Green Beret combat veteran. Miguel was already a serial killer and rapist while he was in Vietnam. He would brag about his war crimes by showing his 12-year-old cousin the Polaroids he had taken of his victims. The pictures would be of women that he had raped, murdered, and dismembered. Many of these women, or even young girls, had been tied to trees by rope. Then Miguel would rape them before he would decapitate them with a machete. Some pictures showed him posing with the heads. While Richard was in prison, he had said that he was never shocked or disgusted by those pictures from Vietnam. However, he was fascinated by them. Richard started smoking weed and drinking when he was only 10 years old, around the same time that he had started sleeping in the local cemetery to get away from his father's abuse. Richard was at Miguel's house on May 4th, 1973, when Miguel had shot and killed his wife during a fight. Again, he said even though he should have been traumatized, he was fascinated by the murder he just witnessed. After the shooting, Richard had started to withdraw more from his family, later moving in with Ruth, his older sister, and Roberto, her husband, who was an obsessive peeping Tom and would take Richard with him on his nightly activities. Around this time, Ramirez started taking LSD and started getting into Satanism. Miguel had been found not guilty of murdering his wife Jessie by reason of insanity, which a lot of people think is because of his PTSD from serving in the Vietnam War. He served 4 years at the Texas State Mental Hospital. When Miguel was released in 1977, his influence on Richard continued. They would do drugs and would drink together. Miguel would even occasionally follow along when Roberta would go creep on the women of the neighborhood. This is when Richard's sexual fantasies started to really form into the level they were when he started killing. When he was at school, he had started working at the local Holiday Inn, where he would use his key to rob the patrons while they slept. On at least one occasion while doing this, he had molested two kids on the elevator. However, it was never reported. He had been fired after being caught trying to rape a woman in her hotel room by her husband. After the woman's husband beat Ramirez half to death, the criminal charges were dropped because the couple lived out of state and wouldn't go back to testify against him. When he was in ninth grade at Jefferson High School, he dropped out and moved to California when he turned 22. Ramirez's first kill is said to have happened on April 10, 1984, when he murdered 9-year-old Mae Lung in the basement of the apartment building he had been living in at the time, in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco. She had been with her younger brother when she went looking for the dollar bill that she had lost. That's when Ramirez approached her and told her that he knew where it was and to follow him to the basement. When they got to the basement, Ramirez beat, strangled, and raped the little girl before he had stabbed her to death with a switchblade. Ramirez left her body hanging from a pipe by her shirt. This murder wouldn't be connected to his other kills until 2009, when his DNA matched the sample found at the scene. It wasn't connected for so long because Richard's Emma was either breaking into homes to kill or shooting someone on the freeway while Mae Lung was lured into the basement. Ramirez murdered 79-year-old Jenny Vincow on June 28, 1984 in her Glassell Park apartment in Los Angeles, and her throat had been slit so deep that she had almost been decapitated. He had slipped up and left a fingerprint on the mesh screen that he had taken out of the window. This is the murder that really shaped his MO. He would rob the victim's homes he would break into, mainly to support his cocaine addiction or to pay rent. Was attacked by Ramirez outside her house in Rosemead. He had shot her in the face after she had parked in her garage. Maria survived being shot in the head because she had her keys in her hand, which she raised to protect herself, causing the bullet to bounce off. She then played it smart, which pleased Ramirez since he had walked into her house where her 34-year-old roommate, Dale Okazaki, heard the shot and hid behind the kitchen counter. However, Ramirez had seen her hiding behind the counter, and she was instantly killed with one shot to the head. Within an hour of the attack, Ramirez had pulled 30-year-old Veronica Wu out of her car in Monterey Park and shot her twice before leaving her there. The two murders and one attempted murder in one night really got the media's attention, naming him the walk-in killer and the valley intruder. On March 27th, 1985, Ramirez entered a home that he had robbed earlier that year, just outside of Whittier. Around 2 a.m., he killed 64-year-old Vincent Zazzara. The gunshot woke up his wife, 44-year-old Maxine. Ramirez attacked her and tied her hands while shouting to know where their valuables were. While he was busy searching the room, Maxine was able to free herself and grab a shotgun from under the bed. However, it wasn't loaded. And now, enraged, Ramirez shot Maxine 3 times before mutilating her body. He had gouged out her eyes and put them in a jewelry box they had took with him and left. Vincent and Maxine's son, Peter, found their bodies. Once again, slipping by from his Avia sneakers in their flower bed, which police had photographed and had castmates, this was their only evidence until the bullets were found to be a match to the other ones at the other scenes. On May 14, 1985, Richard went back to Monterey Park and had gone into the home of 66-year-old Bill Don and his 56-year-old disabled wife, Lillian. Bill was shot in the face as he tried grabbing his own gun. After he had beaten the already fatally wounded 66-year-old Ramirez, went for Lillian, using cuffs to bound her. He raped her before ransacking their home for its valuables. Bill died in the hospital. 15 days later, he had stolen a cart and had driven to Monrovia and gone into the home of 83-year-old Mabel Bell and her 81-year-old disabled sister, Florence Lang. Ramirez had found a hammer in the kitchen, which he used to beat Florence and then tied her up before literally shocking her with an electrical cord. After he had raped her, he used her sister's lipstick to draw a pentagram on her thigh as well as on the walls of both of the ladies' bedrooms. Mabel died later in the hospital. The next day in Burbank, Ramirez snuck into the home of 42-year-old Carol Kyle. He had handcuffed Carol and her 11-year-old son together before rummaging through the house. He released Carol to show him where the valuables were, before raping her repeatedly while telling her not to look at him or he would cut her eyes out. He left after handcuffing the two together again. On July 2, 1985, Ramirez, once again driving a stolen car, drove to Arcadia where he randomly picked the home of 75-year-old widowed grandmother Mary Cannon. He had quietly entered Mary's home and found her asleep. He had brutally beat her with a lamp before stabbing her with a 10-inch butcher knife from her own kitchen, continuing even after she was dead. 3 days later, in Sierra Madre, Ramirez broke into the home of 16-year-old Whitney Bennett. Whitney was asleep when Ramirez had entered her house and beat her with a tire iron. He then decided to try and strangle her with an electrical cord. However, he was surprised when the cord sparked and Whitney started breathing again. He left after that, and Whitney was able to survive the attack, even though she needed 470 stitches to close the cuts on her scalp. 2 days later, he had a new victim, 60-year-old Joyce Nelson, who lived in Monterey Park. After he had found the woman sleeping on her couch, he killed her by repeatedly stomping on her head, leaving a shoe print imprinted on her face. Ramirez drove through 2 different neighborhoods before driving back to Monterey Park, where he entered the home of 63-year-old Sophie Dickman. He attacked her, handcuffed her, attempted to rape her, and took her jewelry while holding her at gunpoint. He had gotten everything that's of value. He told her to swear on Satan. On the 20th, he decided to buy a machete before driving to Glendale in a stolen Toyota. He entered the home of 66-year-old Layla Needing and her 66-year-old husband, Maxon. He had barged into the sleeping couple's room where he attacked them with his new weapon before killing them with a shot to the head. He mutilated the couple more before taking their valuables. After Ramirez pawned the items, he drove to Sun Valley. The next morning, around 4:15 a.m., he entered the Covenant home. Ramirez shot Chanarong in the head before repeatedly raping and beating his wife, Somkid. He tied up their 8-year-old son before dragging Somkid around, demanding to know where their valuables were, and that she swear to Satan that she isn't hiding any money from him. On August 6, 1985, Ramirez broke into the home of Chris and Virginia Peterson in Northridge. He had gone into the couple's bedroom and shot 27-year-old Virginia in the face. He shot Chris in the neck and tried to leave. However, Chris fought back, dodging 2 more shots before Ramirez finally left, and they survived. 2 days later, he drove a stolen car to Diamond Bar, where he broke into the home of 27-year-old Sakina Abouath and her husband and her 31-year-old husband Elias around 2:30 a.m. He had instantly killed Elias before handcuffing and beating Sakina while demanding to know where their valuables were, and then brutally raping her. Ramirez once again was demanding she swear to Satan that she wouldn't scream during the multiple assaults. When her 3-year-old son had gone into the room, he tied him up before going back to his attack on Sakina. After Ramirez finally left, Sakina untied her son and sent him to go get the neighbors for help. Ramirez had been following along with the media coverage and had decided to leave Los Angeles and moved to San Francisco. On August 18th, he broke into the home of 66-year-old Peter and 62-year-old Barbara Pan. He had shot Peter in the temple, killing him instantly, then moved on to Barbara, who he had beat and sexually assaulted before shooting her in the head. Ramirez then used Barbara's lipstick to draw a pentagram and to write Jack the Knife on their wall. He had once again left his size 11 Avia shoe print behind. Detectives were able to match it to a specific brand of Avia shoes that weren't all that common at the time. The lead detectives, Frank Salerno and Gil Carrillo, were able to get into contact with the manufacturer and they retrieved the soles. They had discovered that only six size 11 shoes existed. Five had been shipped to Arizona and one shipped to a store in LA. The only person who had bought that one pair of shoes was the one and only Richard Ramirez. When the ballistics matched the other cases and the shoe print matched the ones left in LA, the then San Francisco mayor, Diane Feinstein, released the information to the press. The leak enraged the detectives actually working the case because they knew their killer and now gave him the opportunity to destroy any valuable evidence. Press conference. And that same night, he dropped his size 11 and a half Avia shoes off of the Golden Gate Bridge. He stayed in San Francisco for a few days before he had gone back to the Los Angeles area. On August 24th, he drove 76 miles south of Los Angeles to Mission Viejo in a stolen orange Toyota. There, he entered the homes of James Romero Jr. and his family, who had just gotten back from their vacation in Mexico. When James, he went and woke up his parents, which caused Ramirez to leave. However, James had run outside and had gotten the make and style and partial license plate number. He then called the police and gave them this information. Instead, Ramirez had broken into 30-year-old Bill Karn's house, where he lived with his 29-year-old fiance, Inez Erickson, through the back door. He had woken up Bill when he had gone into the couple's room and had cocked his gun before shooting him three times and then turned his attention towards Inez. Ramirez told her he was the Night Stalker before forcing her to swear her love to Satan while he beat her and then tied her up with her fiancé's neckties. After he had gotten all the valuables he could find, he went back to Inez and dragged her to another room where she was raped. He kept demanding her to swear to Satan that there was nothing else in the house she was hiding. Before Ramirez left, he had told the beaten woman to tell them the Night Stalker was here. When he had finally left, Inez untied herself and ran to the neighbors for help for Bill. While in surgery, doctors removed two of the three bullets from Bill's head, and he survived. She gave a very detailed description of Ramirez to detectives who had also once again found a shoe print. The orange Toyota was found in Wilshire Center, Los Angeles, on August 28. Detectives pulled only one fingerprint from the car. It was enough to get a positive identity on Ramirez, who was then described as a 25-year-old drifter from Texas with a long rap sheet that included a lot of arrests for traffic and illegal drug violations. The next day, Richard's mugshot was released from an arrest in 1984, and now the Night Stalker finally had a face and a name. At the press conference, detectives said another one potential victim was 32-year-old Patty Higgins, who was murdered in her house in Arcadia. However, she wasn't found until July 2nd when she didn't show up for work. Patty had been sodomized, strangled, and her throat had been slashed. Ramirez was charged with murder and burglary regarding Patty's murder. However, the charges had gotten dropped because there was a lack of concrete physical evidence that linked him to her murder. In the meantime, Ramirez had been bragging to his fellow inmates that he had killed over 20 people and was bragging about how it took 25 years to connect him to the murder of Mei Lung. Ramirez, being completely unaware that his face and name are now out in the open, had gotten a bus to visit his brother in Tucson, Arizona, on August 30th. Instead, he returned to Los Angeles the next day. While leaving the bus station, he walked right past officers who had been staking out the bus stations, trying to trap their killer. However, he walked into a convenience store in East LA. After he heard a group of Hispanic ladies terrifyingly whisper, El Matador, or the killer, it was then Ramirez looked and saw his face on the front pages of newspapers and quickly left the store. He had tried to carjack a woman after running across the Santa Ana freeway. However, bystanders chased after him. The mob chased him over several fences and two more carjackings. He was finally brought down when someone had hit him over the head with a fence post. They then held him down and beat him up until police showed up. The jury selection for the Night Stalker's trial began on July 22, 1988. During his first court appearance, Ramirez held up his hand to show a pentagram drawn on it and yelled. On August 3rd, the Los Angeles Times reported that some of the prison staff heard Ramirez talking about shooting the prosecutor with a gun that he was going to smuggle into the courtroom. Because of this, a metal detector was installed outside of the courtroom. On the 14th, the trial was paused when Phyllis Singletary, one of the jurors, didn't show up. Later on, she was found in her apartment and had been shot to death. The jury's anxiety rose at this, wondering if Ramirez had somehow been able. However, it was later found that she had unfortunately been shot by her boyfriend, who after had gone and committed suicide with the same gun in a hotel. The juror who replaced Phyllis, was scared to go home. Richard Ramirez was convicted on September 20th, 1989 of 13 counts of murder, 5 counts of attempted murder, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. He was sentenced to die in California's death chamber during the penalty phase of the trial on November 7th. Ramirez told reporters, "Big deal. Death always went." His trial costed $1.8 million, which made history until it was surpassed by the O.J. Simpson case in 1994. By the time of Ramirez's trial, he really sparked a lot of people's interest and had fans writing him letters and even going to visit him. Dorian Loy had started writing him letters in 1985 and had written him 75 letters during his time in prison. Ramirez proposed 3 years later, and they got married on October 3, 1996, in the San Quentin State Prison. For several years before Ramirez had died, Doreen had stated that she would commit suicide when her new husband was executed. However, she left him in 2009 when the DNA confirmed Ramirez had raped 9-year-old Mei Lung. He was engaged to 23-year-old writer Kristen Lee when he died in 2013. Psychiatrist Michael H. Stone described Ramirez as a made psychopath and not a born psychopath. Stone stated that his schizoid personality disorder contributed to him not having remorse towards his victims. He added that Ramirez had been knocked out and had even almost died on multiple occasions before he was 6 years old, and stated that Ramirez later developed temporal lobe epilepsy, aggressivity, and hypersexuality. On June 7th, 2013, Ramirez died due to complications of his B-cell lymphoma at the Marin General Hospital in Greenbrae, California. He had been on death row for 23 years and was 53 years old. Some estimate that he would have been in his 70s when he would have been executed because of the lengthy appeals process in California. This has been A Twist of Fate. Thank you so much for listening, and as always, if you have any questions or requests, feel free to message me. Have a great day.